gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. 'Cause I can't stop the warmth, the shelter, homeless, feed the poor.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. Today we're going to discuss the harmful mandatory vaccine schedule for children in the U.S. We have been lied to by the CDC, and our children's health is being destroyed by corporate greed and fraudulent science. In the U.S., we have more one-day infant deaths than any other industrialized nation in the world, and experts attribute this in part to the vaccines that infants get on their first day of life. We cannot trust the mainstream media to give us unbiased news on vaccines because of their financial ties to the pharmaceutical industry. And parents cannot trust the doctor's opinions on vaccines because they are taught the same false parroted information put out by the CDC. My guest today is Dr. Kenneth Stoller, an expert on the harm caused by vaccines. Dr. Stoller was trained as a pediatrician at UCLA and was a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics for 2 decades. In 2008, he resigned from the Academy after realizing that the Academy had known that mercury in vaccines can cause autism and other neurological damage, yet the organization refused to make a determined effort to have mercury removed from all vaccines, and instead engaged in a cover-up to promote the interests of the vaccine makers and the pharmaceutical empires, Dr. Stoller found. He's been a very public voice advocating for national attention for autism and effective intervention. In 2004, he was invited to Washington to testify about autism treatments before the House Government Reform Committee Subcommittee on Human Rights and Wellness, chaired by Representative Dan Burton of Indiana. The invitation he received asked him to speak about hyperbaric treatment for brain-injured children. Dr. Stoller feels there is no doubt in the minds of top officials what's causing autism, so there's little point in trying to convince them of what they already know. Hopefully, he will explain why the government refuses to address autism as a national crisis. I've posted many videos on my Facebook page of Dr. Stoller's previous lectures. He points out that the CDC has never conducted any studies comparing children who received vaccines to children who never received vaccines. The CDC has also never studied the adverse effects of providing so many vaccines and giving them to infants sometimes with 4 shots in 1 office visit. The documentary Vax from Cover-Up to Catastrophe only looked at the MMR vaccines linked to autism. But think of how many other vaccines have never been studied. Who is to say that all the other vaccines do not cause autism as well? Everyone needs to see this documentary. Congressman Posey has been begging Congress to subpoena the CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, since July 2014, and so far there has been no subpoena. And it's been 12 years since that fraudulent CDC study was published, and now 2 years since a senior scientist blew the whistle at the CDC. Congress needs to subpoena him as soon as possible to stop this atrocity. Dr. Stoller will tell us about the CDC's cover-up of the vaccines linked to autism and the ongoing fight to educate the public about the dangers of vaccine, but with no help from the big pharma-controlled mainstream media. I also would like to have Dr. Stoller discuss his new book titled Incurable Me, Why the Best Medical Research Does Not Make It into Clinical Practice, which is available on Amazon. So welcome to the show, Dr. Stoller.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you on. I was watching a lot of your videos today and your articles, and you are really up on this topic. And, of course, I think you and I talked years ago on vaccines and autism. But you've been in this for the long haul.
Where do you want me to start?
let's see. Let's start back when you quit the academy, the academy that you quit?
American Academy of Pediatrics, right.
Yeah, I was reading over your letter today, and you really told them. Go ahead and tell the audience about that.
Yeah, that and 25 cents, as they say. But
okay.
the issue really came to light in 1999, because out of nowhere, there was no public protest, there were no riots in the street, there were no moms launching a letter-writing campaign. The American Academy of Pediatrics, jointly with the Public Health Service, said that they were going to phase out the use of thimerosal in vaccines. And thimerosal is a preservative that's been used in vaccines, half of which is ethyl mercury, which is at least as toxic as methyl mercury, and it could be even more toxic. There's no safe mercury, by the way.
Right.
It's like saying safe cyanide or safe plutonium. They made this announcement, and the question is, why did they make this announcement? Where did this come from? Well, it was at a time when the FDA and the EPA were coming down pretty hard on mercury and wanted mercury out of medicines, and they wanted mercury out of the environment. And so the AAP and the Public Health Service figured, well, it was only a matter of time before moms lost faith in the vaccine program, because all these vaccines had very high levels of mercury in them. But that didn't happen. There were no riots in the streets. There were no moms going, this was a great idea. It was like they came out with this thing and crickets. What happened then in the year 2000 was that the CDC called together an illegal meeting between themselves and all the vaccine manufacturers. The American Academy of Pediatrics was there as well. And I say it was an illegal meeting because whenever a government agency has a meeting with private industry, especially an industry that they're at least in part responsible for regulating, because the CDC has been mandated with making sure vaccines are safe and that the vaccine schedule is safe, even beyond, you know, FDA approval. And so this was a closed meeting. It was not open to the public. And they discussed the findings of their epidemiologist, whose name was Verstraten. And
was that
he
the meeting
found,
at Simpsonwood? Was that the meeting
yes,
at Simpsonwood?
Yes, that's the infamous Simpsonwood meeting.
Right, okay.
And Simpsonwood is a conference center in Georgia.
Okay.
So this meeting took place, and they discussed Verstraten's findings that there was definitely an increased risk of neurobehavioral and neurodevelopmental disorders in children who were receiving thimerosal vaccines, including autism. And
correct.
They held this meeting and were told that the information that they discussed was on the PDQ. No one was to talk about it. And what they proceeded in doing was not in getting thimerosal eliminated from vaccines, was to hide their data. And this epidemiologist's research got diluted four times, may have been a fifth time as well, doesn't really matter. They kept putting in more and more irrelevant subjects into the data pool so that the significance of the thimerosal would be statistically bleached out of the study, and that's what they published 3 years later, vindicating thimerosal as the cause for any kind of neurological problems. So the American Academy of Pediatrics not only did not shed transparency on these new findings, a year after they said they wanted thimerosal out of vaccines, but then they ended up backpedaling. And over the next decade, the only thing that they did was to encourage the use of the vaccines and protest a fictional TV show, Eli Stone, about a San Francisco lawyer, the pilot of which was definitely anti-thimerosal anti-mercury in vaccines. And so when I saw that that was their response, despite the fact that 10 years earlier they had said thimerosal should come out of vaccines, I wrote that open letter of resignation and basically said how crazy it was to defend the use of mercury in vaccines. I mean, mercury is the most deadly non-radioactive element on Earth.
Really? How did they respond to your letter?
Silence.
I mean, you covered all the points. It was an excellent letter.
No, there was no response to my letter.
None?
I write a lot of letters that don't get responses.
Oh, so do I. I do the congressmen in the White House all the time. Yeah. And they don't get responses.
I became suspicious of vaccines when the hepatitis B vaccine came out because I couldn't figure out why we were giving the hepatitis B vaccine to babies. I seem to have missed the article that came out showing that this would be efficacious and relevant given that the at-risk population would not be babies but maybe, you know, teenagers and young adults who are becoming IV drug abusers or prostitutes, something like that. So why give it to babies? There must have been some big, you know, article saying even that the antibodies would just be present 15 or 20 years later, which they're really not. And I couldn't find this article, and I was chastising myself that I had lost touch about not being able to find the relevant research. And then I realized, what if there wasn't the relevant research? Maybe this was there wasn't that. It was just a scam. This was to get money. This was all about money. The original hepatitis B vaccine was loaded with mercury.
Right.
They pulled it in year 2001, I think. They pulled the original hepatitis B vaccine because there was real concern about a paper was published that showed that premature infants especially were getting super toxic levels of mercury exposure from this vaccine. And, of course, the CDC ginned up all kinds of phony studies showing that thimerosal was okay. In fact, one of the studies showed that the more mercury you got, the healthier you were. So this was the kind of activity going on at the CDC. They employed a Danish scientist and paid him a lot of money to come up with these phony baloney epidemiological studies. And the public doesn't know. The public doesn't know what's in vaccines, how they're supposed to work, what the risks are. Physicians don't know. Physicians aren't taught anything about vaccines. I mean, for God's sake, if you put stuff in a vaccine and the vaccine is supposed to aggravate your immune system, why would you be putting milk protein in vaccines? Why would you be putting peanut oil? Why would you be putting eggs? So you have all these kids now who are allergic to milk and eggs and peanuts. I mean, they don't know what they're...
We have the sickest generation of kids in U.S. history.
So not only do they not know what they're doing, they don't seem to care either. It's like it's become a religion. And the religion is, I call it jabism, you know, because when you get injected, it's a jab. But what's driving this religion is money, because vaccines are a multi-billion-dollar industry, and you get those vaccines mandated by the CDC, you have no liability whatsoever.
Right.
The government steps in the middle and says, no, you can't sue the vaccine manufacturers. If you're injured, you have to go to the vaccine court if you even know about it, which is a very adversarial, dysfunctional, and broken system for compensation if you are injured by a vaccine. But that's another story.
Well,
Did I answer your question?
You're very kind. I look at this as vaccines are part of the genocide taking place in the U.S. along with the, you know, along with the chemtrail spraying and the fluoride in the water and GMO foods and the chemically laced foods sold in grocery stores and the contaminated drinking water.
You know, no, they would never do something like that. So you have the World Health Organization putting human chorionic gonadotropin in tetanus vaccines to be given to women in the third world. They've done this in the Philippines. They've done this in Nigeria. They've done this in Kenya. And this is, of course, without their consent. And these women become allergic to their own human chorionic gonadotropin. And so what's the big deal about that? Because if you don't have adequate HCG levels, you cannot sustain a pregnancy. So you end up aborting your pregnancy. It's a form of sterilization delivered at by a vaccine, stealthily delivered by a vaccine. Oh, well, they would never do something like that in the United States. Who cares about those third world people, you know?
This is the worst country in the world for it. I mean, I had Kevin Galloway on last week or the week before, and he talks about the genocide that's been going on since 1945. And the U.S. is the worst. I mean, we do it all here, and then we try to push it on the rest of the world, you know, but this mandatory vaccine schedule, there is no other country that has anywhere near this number of vaccines on their schedule.
As you said, there's no safety studies on the vaccine schedule. I mean, so in California, we have an unconstitutional law that requires children to be vaccinated or they can't go to school.
Right.
All right. And the law is based on safety, but it doesn't say safe compared to what? Because the Supreme Court has already determined, or they've opined that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. When you have a law based on safety, and the Supreme Court has determined that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, so how does that work? You know, so every kid in the state,
you know, sick our kids are. You know, I mean, we talk about autism all the time because that's the most debilitating illness that they get from vaccines. But look at all the other illnesses and disorders that are caused by vaccines. I mean,
allergies.
Can you name some of those? Yeah.
Neurodevelopmental disorders cover a lot of territory. You don't have to have autism to have been injured by a vaccine. You could just have tics. You could get ADD. You could get OCD. You could get cognitive impairments, you know, subtle or not. But I wouldn't want somebody coming up to me and taking 10% of my IQ away. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So, like they've been doing with fluoride in our water.
And as you know, I have a section in my book on fluoride. It's amazing how easily we have allowed ourselves to be experimented upon. But it's time for people to wake up. Enough's enough. And they're going to require school children to be vaccinated without being able to opt out if they can. And then they'll start attacking different segments of the population, primarily motivated by money. But you also have to realize that apparently vaccines are part of a biodefense warfare program. You know, it's illegal to have an offensive biological warfare program, but it is not illegal to have a biodefense program. Well, you know, this is the same guys that just put on a different hat. Instead of being the Secretary of War, you're the Secretary of Defense. You're the same secretary, okay? And you're not going to be doing anything differently. So this is the situation we have. We have a soft-kill bioweapon, but that is something secondary to the money they're making. And they're protected by the government because the government needs to protect their biodefense manufacturers because they want to be doing this research. They want to have this tool in their military armamentarium.
Right. Look at how they're vaccinating all of our troops, poisoning all of them.
Oh, they've always, you know, you sign up for the military and you are theirs. They can give you whatever they want. You are their guinea pig. I mean, you're aware of the studies, especially in the black, with the black military troops, all right. The experiments that they've been exposed to. And, you know, let us not forget the Tuskegee experiment brought to us by the Public Health Service.
Right.
So we are now in the midst of a giant Tuskegee experiment, but it's, you know, anything goes.
It's like you say, they know it. They know it's causing autism. And, you know, I dug up an article I wrote 10 years ago about the worst welfare epidemic in U.S. history, and that was this autism epidemic they were causing. And they just let it go on. And I posted that. It was like, I wrote it 10 years ago, and look at how much the autism epidemic has skyrocketed since then.
The fact that vaccines cause autism is one of the worst-kept government secrets. But they're going to ride this horse until the horse collapses. Now, it's already at the point where they can't come clean. If they came clean, the liability involved in that is enormous. I mean,
right. Explain that to the listeners. Right. How much would it cost the U.S. to get honest and say that they caused this and they knew it all along, and to take care of these injured people, these injured kids, well, adults now?
I would assume it would be trillions of dollars.
Trillions.
Of course, we spend trillions of dollars in our silly wars. Okay.
Oh,
but heavens to bid, we spend trillions of dollars making children and families whole, and some of them will never be made whole. They'll always be impaired. And I remember when I pounded the hallways of Congress talking to various sympathetic congressmen, and I was told, listen, we're never going to have a bill or legislation that has treatment and autism in the same sentence. Not going to happen.
Really?
The same bill. Not going to happen.
Why?
Because
why is that?
Because when you start treating something, and I'm talking about something other than ABA therapy, you know, behavioral therapy, but treating autism as an actual medical problem, you're never going to have it in the same bill, because when you're treating something, you're treating something. Well, what's the something you're treating? If you're treating an inflammatory encephalitis induced by a vaccine, well, oh, my God, you know, we got to stop doing this. Well, no one wants to stop doing it, so we're not going to encourage treatment, because when you're treating something, it's like I said, there's something you're treating. And what is that something? And people will ask questions. Well, how does this something happen?
That explains a lot to me. That explains a lot to me, because I've been asking, you know, over and over to people, why isn't the U.S. treating this epidemic like they should? I mean, they made such a to-do about polio. I mean, and when I was a kid, you know, we got our polio vaccines, and I didn't know anybody that got polio. I didn't know anybody, you know, but they made such a big to-do, and of course there's a whole other story to the polio vaccine in itself.
Right, that it was actually pesticides that enabled the virus to wreak havoc in the nervous system, and without the DDT they were spraying, there wouldn't have been polio. So now we're having a new enterovirus, and there's hundreds of enteroviruses, not just the polio virus, and this group of viruses, in the presence of certain toxins, especially pesticides, will cause paralysis. So now we have a lot of kids being affected by this enterovirus D68, okay?
Right.
But, and in India, to use an example, they pat themselves on the back. They got rid of the polio virus from India. Their cases of acquired flaccid paralysis are through the roof. What's acquired flaccid paralysis? It's polio, okay? Their cases of polio are through the roof, but it's okay because it's not being caused by the polio virus.
Oh.
Why isn't it okay? You know,
right.
Why is that okay?
Right. Well, that really explains it, because, right, like I said, you know, any other, you know, childhood disease or something that came up that was spreading through people and everything, you know, I mean, there always seemed to be a big ruckus in the government to figure out why, where is this coming from, we got to stop it. But not this, but like you say, they know what's causing it. But my God, it's to the extreme. What are they saying now? By 2025, one out of two children will be autistic?
Yes, and then they'll say, oh, this was all, they were always here. You know, we just called them something else.
And that is what got me investigating this to begin with. When I went to the CDC website after I was doing research on this, I knew nothing about it. Okay, I just had messages from the autism moms in 2003 asking me to investigate it. So I started, and then I went to the CDC, and I knew there was an epidemic. You know, I could see that, and I knew, and I had studied all the data from the school districts and stuff across the country, and I seen that it was spread across the country. And then I found out how many vaccines they were giving kids and how young they were giving them, and it all made sense. But I thought, well, I'll go to the CDC's website, this is before I was suspicious of them at all, to see what they said, what was causing this. Well, that's what they said, and that's what made me investigate, because I knew that was a lie, because I grew up in a town of 2,000 people, and it was from kindergarten to 12th grade all in one, and there should have been 7 kids there by the statistics that were out at that time in that town that had autism. And I tried to think back and think of one autistic child that was in there. And we had an ungraded room where kids with Down syndrome or slightly retarded or something went. And I tried to picture a child. By this time, I had seen videos of autistic children, of an autistic child, and there were none. So, I mean, that right away told me the CDC was lying. And being they were lying about something so obvious, it was like, well, then it's the truth. These vaccines are causing it, and they're covering it up. And this was all the way back in 2003 and 2004. They were still saying this.
That was one of my profound disappointments with the American Academy of Pediatrics, because, you know, I started practicing pediatrics in the 1980s, where there was still not a lot of autism around. And when the CDC started promoting the idea that, oh, these kids were always here, we just called them something else, I said, well, that's not true at all. I didn't see my first case of autism until 1989. I never saw one in medical school. I never saw one in my residency. And you know, I know the special ed teachers didn't see them. So where are all these people? Why aren't they stepping forward and saying, excuse me, these kids were not always here? And no one did. None of the pediatricians came forward and said, no, it's not due to better diagnosing. I never saw these kids in the 1980s, and it wasn't because I missed a diagnosis.
Right.
So it was disappointing to me that they allowed this perpetuation of this myth of better diagnosing as the reason why there are so many neurologically impaired and cognitively impaired children in our society.
Right. Well, you know, and this also feeds into the medical industrial complex too. I mean, they create all these diseases and then they have all these diseases to treat and make money off of. I mean, I was talking to my friend the other day and on the TV there was all these commercials for this problem with children, that problem with children, this, you know, regular clinics and everything. And I said, when you were a child, did you ever see that? You know, they needed whole clinics for allergies, or they needed, you know, children's, you know, doctors, hospitals, and all this stuff to treat all these, you know, illnesses the children had. They didn't have them. I knew one child when I was in that school that had diabetes when I was a kid. One child, and the only reason it stuck out was because when we'd have holiday parties and stuff, she couldn't eat sweet stuff. I never knew anyone with asthma or an allergy or anything like that the whole time I was growing up in this one school. So, I mean, I observed all these kids. Go ahead.
One of the congressional aides for one of the congressmen told me that whenever the government has a role in or is playing a role in the creation of a problem, such as an illness, there's always going to be a lot of obfuscation around that illness. And I think, you know, perhaps this is a good point to where we can transition and start talking about Lyme disease. Because you know, children with autism and the issue with vaccines, CDC-created problems, the situation with Lyme disease is also intimately created with the sickness that's going on at the CDC. So there was definitely a change in the virulence in this organism that causes Lyme disease. And the scientific literature says this change took place probably within the last 200 years. But it's probably took place in the last 60 years because there was this research facility on Plum Island off the coast of Long Island in Connecticut where they were experimenting with using ticks as a vector for these illnesses. And they were probably trying to weaponize the Borrelia organism that became known as Lyme disease. Because, you know, Lyme, Connecticut is only like 10 miles away from this facility. I think their plan was to destroy all the livestock in the Soviet Union until somebody with half a brain said, and then who's going to feed them? You know, so that plan fell through. But it's just not explainable why an illness such as Lyme disease, as devastating as it is, has been classified by the CDC as just a nuisance infection. This is an illness that can kill you, that will give you Alzheimer's disease, because, you know, there really is no such thing as Alzheimer's disease for the most part. It's an infection with spirochetes. And this is in the medical literature. It's probably going to take 10 years before that sinks in on the societal mindset that Alzheimer's disease is an infection with spirochetes, predominantly of the Borrelia class, which is what causes Lyme disease. And so we have dementia, we have sudden death due to Lyme myocarditis, we have arthritis, we have all kinds of debilitating cognitive and psychiatric problems that this illness creates. And the CDC finally is admitting there's 330,000 new cases of Lyme disease every year. Where's really? The public health? Where's the public health emergency? Where's the five alarm, you know, bells going off? Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
I don't hear anything about that. I don't hear anything about Lyme disease. And the first time I heard of it was the mid-90s. A girl up in Armont, Michigan got it.
Well, if you take 330,000 new cases of Lyme disease every year, and that's probably an underestimate, and you throw that back a few decades, how many people do you think that is?
We're talking
maybe 50 million Americans are infected with this organism, and even if you were a conscientious employee of the CDC Infectious Disease Division, I mean, imagining if that's possible, and it might require a lot of imagination, are you going to make an announcement that, gee, fellow Americans, we have this disease called Lyme disease, and it can cause dementia and sudden death and all kinds of psychiatric illnesses and arthritis, and we don't really have a good test for it, because most people are missed, you know, when they take the Lyme disease test, they will be missed in the conventional testing, and we don't have consensus on treatment, and we don't have a way of knowing when you're done getting treated. Have a good evening. Well, people will lose sleep over an announcement like that. And then when you lose sleep, you grab your pitchforks and you come after the person who made the announcement. So they're not making the announcement. Now, of course, if there's a pharmaceutical company behind you, like there was for that hoaxy Mexican swine flu epidemic,
yeah,
the CDC has no problem scaring you. Oh, body bags. There will be dead bodies piling up in the street. I remember when they made those announcements to scare people into getting a vaccine because there was a pharmaceutical company making money. But if
I wrote a series article on that one, on the swine flu propaganda, pump up the volume. What a bunch of bullshit that was.
Yeah, but the CDC is not willing to scare anybody if they don't have their backs covered by a big pharmaceutical company who's going to be making billions of dollars by their decisions. So
that's what they're going to do with Zika? Is that what they're going to do with Zika?
Well, that's what they're trying to do with Zika. But it's not working because all this data is coming out. There's no microcephaly in Colombia. There was no microcephaly in Polynesia. I mean, there's 1,000 new cases of Zika virus every week, I think, in Puerto Rico.
Right.
You don't hear about epidemic of microcephaly. So now, of course, if they spray everyone with pesticides,
like they
they're
going to
get their they'll start getting their microcephaly, and they go, "See, we told you, Zika virus is causing the microcephaly." No, it's the damn pesticides, you idiots.
Right, and then too, in Florida, where he handed over $26 million for this spraying for this Zika virus, and his wife owns stock in the company that's doing the spraying, the governor's wife.
How convenient. What a coincidence.
Yeah. Poisoning the people with this spraying. Yeah.
Spraying
$26 million she hands over to his wife's company.
Spraying pesticides by air should be the last resort, not the first resort, because of all the untoward problems that causes, including killing all the bees. But they're not interested in public health. They're interested in having people die and dying slowly so that they can get all their money while they're dying slowly.
Right, exactly. And like now, I said, you know, one out of three elderly get Alzheimer's, you know, or that's what they say it is anyhow. And I try to tell the elderly that, you know, this getting these flu vaccines, letting them talk you into that flu vaccine. And then the chemtrail spraying, and then like you say, that all these other things that they're doing is causing this. And then I said, what's so sad, that's the end of their life, and at the end of their life, they're causing all the elderly to get this. And you know how difficult people with Alzheimer's can be. So it really disrupts the family at the end of these people's lives, you know, and make it an unpleasant to be around this person. You know, they just complete the thing of destroying the families by getting to this point where they cause
collateral,
all the elderly to
collateral
get
damage, you know.
Sure.
Necessary evil. Now, you know, it was interesting while I was researching my book, Incurable Me, which you mentioned was available on Amazon right now. I found out that in 2014, researchers at Rutgers University found a direct link between late-onset Alzheimer's disease and the DDT metabolite called DDE. DDT does not it doesn't break down in the environment, but it does break down into two different metabolites. One of them is DDE. And
okay.
I'm going, now where are these people with late-onset Alzheimer's disease getting the DDE? Is it because they were around in the 40s and the 50s, and when all the DDT sprang, is all this just residual from, you know, half a century ago? And then during my research, I found there's another pesticide that came online in the 1960, around 1960, and it's called Dicofol. And Dicofol is DDT, except it has an extra hydroxyl group on it. So it's like having two identical pigs. One of the pigs has beer breath. Okay.
Okay.
They're still pigs. It's just one has a little alcohol on its breath.
Okay.
So this other pesticide, which is identical to DDT, is not banned. Does not have a general use ban. It is not even on the Stockholm Convention's list of persistent organic pollutants. So it's not regulated in most of the world. And even if it was, you know, the World Health Organization told Africa and other third world countries, just go ahead and use DDT with abandon because we must get rid of the malaria-causing mosquito. Well, that is not a sustainable way of getting rid of that mosquito, by spraying DDT everywhere. And, you know, there's a kind of cancer called Burkitt's lymphoma. Have you ever heard of it?
Pronounce that again.
Burkitt's, B-U-R-K-I-T-T. It's a cancer a lot of children get in Africa, and of course they thought, it's because they have the Epstein-Barr virus and and malaria at the same time. No, it's right. not because they have malaria. It's because they have the Epstein-Barr virus, and they're exposed to all this DDT. That's why they have the cancer. So these are pesticides that cause cancer. These are pesticides that cause Alzheimer's disease. Because, like I said, direct link, not an association, and this is found out by Rutgers University. So I'm not making this stuff up. But what? Right. But nobody does anything about it. You know, they hold congressional hearings on the environment.
They found that out. What did they do about it?
Nothing. They do nothing about it. What did they do? What did they do 60 years ago about the polio epidemic, when they were told by several people, it's not the virus is just opportunistically taking advantage of the fact that people are being poisoned with DDT. What did they do?
Okay.
Nothing. Nothing.
No.
Oh, yes. they finally had it, you know, and smoke and mirrors, general use ban on DDT. Whoop-dee-doo, when you have another pesticide that no one even's heard of, that's essentially DDT. They didn't get rid of anything.
Right. Well, I think these genocidal maniacs are making progress, I'll tell you. When I was writing about the pharmaceutical industry and poisoning all the kids with drugs too, psychotropic drugs and stuff, and it was always the birth rate was over 4 million, okay? So I was always, quote, okay, they get 4 million new customers every year when they put out these drugs and they start drugging kids when they're infants before they're even a year old, for God's sakes, with drugs that cost $1,000 a month. I would say they get 4 million new customers every year. Well, last time I looked, I think it was down to 3.8 million. So it's dropped that much. I mean, I only started writing about this stuff in 2003, 2004. So in that amount of time, they've dropped the population in the U.S. down to that level.
Well, you'll be glad to hear that the teenage birth weight has dropped, too. But not because teenagers aren't fooling around. It's
no,
the HPV, vaccine is causing ovarian failure.
Right. And these endocrine disruptors are causing infertility in a number of different ways. So, I mean, they're just poisoning us in all these different ways. And yes, they are definitely affecting the birth rates and the much lower birth rates. Population is definitely going down. And like I said, with this autism, when I figured out this was part of the depopulation agenda, it was like, well, it was perfect. These kids, if it's one out of two in 2025 in the United States, they won't ever have children. So you just cut it right in half. And that's before all these other substances that are ruining men's sperm and ruining, you know, all these devices, cell phones, affecting sperm in reproductive organs. I mean, they're just hitting us from all sides.
Well, that's why we have to have this influx of immigrants into the United States, because we've been experimenting on ourselves and decreasing, shall we say, the surplus population.
Well, yeah, but we created all these immigrants. We've destroyed all these countries. The United States should be responsible for every one of these refugees. It is the one that created them and destroyed their lives and their homes. And so if that's their purpose, bringing them in because of that, but that isn't the reason they should be bringing them in. It's because the U.S. destroyed these countries.
Well, that's too logical.
Oh.
So,
Why is that logical?
take responsibility for the havoc you caused around the world?
Well, the rest of the world is getting to the point they expect us to. I mean, they hate us. They don't only just hate the government now. They hate us, too, because we won't stop our government from doing this.
So in my book, Incurable Me, Plug, which is available on Amazon, I talk about that it's no secret how to bring down an empire. And like the Roman Empire, it was probably brought down by several factors. There may have been food shortages, and there was lead in the, you know, pipes, and there was lead in the port. Well, we don't have lead. We have fluoride, and fluoride is more toxic than lead.
And we have lead poisoning our water all over the U.S.
Oh, of course we do, yes. Many, many thousands of municipalities have lead levels that are higher than they should be. So you have lead and you have fluoride. So the only thing more toxic than lead and fluoride is arsenic. And some of the water supplies have that too. But, sorry, so we have that going, like Rome did. And probably what brought down Rome was the malaria mosquito, which, you know, arrived in the common era. And, you know, A.D., in A.D. years, after the birth of Christ. Right. And so we don't really have a mosquito problem unless, you know, you're considering the Zika virus a mosquito problem. That it's really not a big problem. That's all a hoax. But we have Lyme disease, and Lyme disease is a much more stealthy and insidious and pernicious illness than perhaps even malaria. So now, that doesn't mean that most people with Lyme disease are not asymptomatic. Just like tuberculosis, 90% of people with tuberculosis are asymptomatic at any one time. So, you know, people are going to find, well, if so many people had Lyme disease, I'd know about it. No, not necessarily, because if your immune system is half decent, you can mask this infection for a long time. Eventually, it'll catch up with you, as it did, for example, with Chris Christopherson, who thought he had Alzheimer's disease 2 years ago, but now it turned out it was Lyme disease, and he's getting better because he's on antibiotics.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
But, you know, we have the CDC saying, oh, you just need, you know, if you meet the criteria, which is very difficult to meet, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of antibiotics and you'll be fine. Really, that's not true, but that's the lie they're putting forward. So their guidelines are creating hordes of chronic Lyme disease patients if you happen to be even fortunate enough to get the correct diagnosis.
Right. Well, you know, the medical industry, I mean, I don't know, anymore, I don't believe that these doctors don't know what they're doing with vaccines or with all these other drugs and, you know, turning this country into a drug-addicted society all the way around. You know, I mean, we talk about the, you know, the opiate epidemic. The man-made pushers, bought and paid for by pharma, created this epidemic. And now it's going to heroin because the people get so addicted to these opiates and stuff that it's not enough. And I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict, so I mean, I know how this works. This system works.
Well, you know, when you say these doctors, I can tell you that the doctors in the trenches are not informed. The doctors you're referring to are the doctors who work for the pharmaceutical companies and for agencies like the CDC. They know what's going on.
Yeah, but anymore, this vaccine issue has been out here all these times. These damn politicians these pediatricians are liars. They just like the money they're making off this. Between 50 and 80% of their income and profits come from giving vaccines. And then what just came out to how much they're making from insurance companies now for vaccinating 100 children, full vaccinations or something, they get $40,000 extra. 200 children, $880,000 extra. That's why they're kicking parents out that won't let their kids get vaccines.
Listen, if pediatricians really thought that unvaccinated kids would be sicker than vaccinated kids, they'd want their whole practice to be unvaccinated kids. But instead, they want to kick out the unvaccinated kids because they are being paid a lot of money to make sure that everyone in their practice is vaccinated. And I mean a lot of money. I mean double their normal salary kind of money.
Right, it's come to that. Right. And then, too, now, then they get to treat all these illnesses that are created. You know,
well,
so it's just big roundabout of money laundering from the pharmaceutical company. And in the meantime, all they do is push drugs and devices.
Well, you know, when it's all about the money, people will look the other way. I think most people would sell their mothers to the glue factory if the price was right.
Well, some of them have, probably. Well, okay, I want to give you an example because I wanted to talk about this week because how the doctors have created this opiate epidemic and everything, and they keep fueling it. You can't stop them. And, okay, for instance, now, going to the hospital, many educated people, woken up people, don't want to go to the hospital because they know over a million people die just because they're in the hospital every single year, you know. And so, anyhow, my boyfriend, my longtime boyfriend, had to have hernia surgery last week. And he hated going, but it was something, I'll never go to another regular doctor in this country again. But he had to go to the hospital because he had to have this surgery, to have this hernia removed. So I went along, and to guard against that they didn't give him any drugs or devices or anything else that they do in hospitals, peddling pharmaceutical products. And so right before he went through, and we explained to them four times during our visit that we don't take any pharmaceutical drugs. We don't take any pharmaceutical poisons, we told them, not even aspirin. And they wanted to know, they wanted to prescribe painkillers there at the hospital. And I told them we have our painkillers at home, natural healing painkillers. And I said, we don't need them. So then they kept insisting, well, you know, it could be really bad or whatever. Finally, I said, we don't want them here. Write us a prescription for 15. If it gets that harmful or something, he needs them, I can run to the drugstore. Otherwise, we take care of this at home. And so anyway, they take him in. They were supposed to come and get me. We signed a thing, me as patient representative. If he needed any other drug or if he needed anything, you know, that while he was having surgery, they were to ask me before they gave him any. Now, like I said, we told him four times we don't take any pharmaceutical drugs. We have it for over a year, not even aspirin. So they didn't call me in for quite a while. And finally I went back there, and the nurse goes, he was a little shaky when he came out of the anesthesia, so we gave him something for the shakiness. And I said, what did you give him? What drug did you give him? And he goes back and he checks and he comes back and he tells me Demerol. So they shot him up with narcotics without asking me because he was a little shaky. And then, you know, I told you how I told him we don't use any pharmaceutical product. And I mean, I blew up when I found this out. And I told him, how could you do this? We told you we don't take any of those opiates. And then you shoot him up with that strong narcotic for the shakiness. And so then I told him that 15 Vicodin, you know, to just write that for that. I get home, I'm reading through all the paperwork. And number one, when I confronted him on this was Aurora Healthcare Hospital out here in Green Bay, Wisconsin. When I confronted him on, why didn't you ask me before you shot him up with narcotics? We told you we don't take any pharmaceutical products. And I had signed that patient advocate form. Oh, that was missing. They couldn't find that. Just signed it 2 hours before. So then, anyhow, we get home. I'm looking through. They wrote a prescription for 60 Vicodin.
Mm.
Oh, and I just, and they called me the next day, and I just told them off. They're just drug pushers and turning society into opiate addicts. You know, and I'm just furious. Furious. But this is what they do.
Well, we have a profit driven, profit created healthcare system in this country, and it was set up that way by the Rockefeller Foundation 100 years ago to just be about,
tell listeners about that, how medicine was taught in this country. Medicine. Yeah.
Well, there, you know, 100 years ago there were homeopathic schools and eclectic medical schools, and the Rockefeller Foundation ginned up a report called the Flexner Report, saying it all the non-allopathic or non-pharmaceutical-based schools were dangerous, and got them, into the... They lobbied legislators, and all these schools had to close, convert, or close. And so we were left with one system of conventional medicine, which was all about patentable drugs, which was exactly what the Rockefeller Foundation wanted. And so that's what we have today, and that's why everything's about profit, everything's about money, and if somebody's not making a lot of money, you don't hear about it. This is not healthcare we're dealing with, this is a business. And if we have something to sell you, whether you need it or not, whether it's good for you or not, it's our job to sell it to you.
Right. Well, you know, I was so mad about the hospital issue that there is one thing that I'm going to demand, and that is I'm going to ask how much that shot of Demerol costs and tell them to deduct that from the bill. And I know they're going to say, well, it's covered by insurance. And I'm going to say, I don't care what it's covered by. You're driving up the cost of insurance and everything else by doing this, drugging people and selling devices they don't need. And so that's
right.
The one thing I'm going to insist on, that they take that off of there. But, yeah, that's all they are, is big pharma paid drug pushers and device pushers. That's all they do. And then
well,
I told you we went off all pharmaceutical drugs. Both of us went off our blood pressure medications, too. We went off everything. Do you know that both of us have normal blood pressure now after a year of eating right and off of these toxins and chemicals they had us on?
And it doesn't mean there aren't good drugs out there. It just means that it's very difficult to find out what you really need and when you really need it and who to trust about what these things actually do.
Right. Well, I'm going to run out of time here any minute, but I wanted to discuss one more thing. You are doing consultations about for vaccine exemptions, aren't you? Out there.
Well, I'm helping people understand if they are at adverse event risk from getting vaccines, and I do that by studying their genetics. So it's kind of a new field called adversomics, where you're studying whether somebody is at greater risk for having untoward reactions to various chemicals or vaccines and things like that.
Well, all kids are, aren't they? At risk if they get these vaccines.
Well, one could argue that vaccines punch holes in your immune system, and depending on who you are and what your genetics are, some of those holes are going to be bigger than others. So by looking at a child's genetics, you can determine, are they at increased risk for having an untoward event?
Okay, I'm guarding my time because all the time, here's the music. Thank you so much, Dr. Stoller, and thank you so much for all you are doing for the families and the parents.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Well, people, I hope you learned some things this week. I did. Dr. Stoller sure has some interesting viewpoints on all of this vaccine cover-up. Tune in next week and we'll talk to you then. Goodbye. Screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. I can't stop the world.